Wow, what a morning so
You've
far.
You've had a busy day.
It's been a busy day. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. This is Thursday, and we're thrilled that you're listening. Chime in. We would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200.
Let's start with Karen right out of the box. How are you, Karen?
I am fine, and I just had the most exciting time watching your collection unfold, Bill.
Oh.
Is that what you're calling it?
Unfold.
It was phenomenal. I usually flip off the TV and, you know, start doing stuff. But I sat glued watching this, and it is just amazing. And the fact that you played with some of these things over 40 years
ago.
Thank you for sharing.
Oh, are you kidding? I'm thrilled to share it. Karen's referring to, I was on the WGN TV morning news this morning. Producer Jeff Hoover and Mike Toomey, our friend Mike Toomey, came to the house and we showed off the collection. And yeah, nobody was injured, so it was a success.
It was so much fun. And then, to top it off, there was that Irv Shriver, the guy, one of the ring bearers from last night for the ceremony.
Yeah.
And he shared his man cave with all of the things he had collected over
years. Oh, all the Cubs stuff, yeah.
Wow. All the Cubs stuff. 86 years old, he was absolutely sincere and loving and you know, his sharing. But you topped my day, mister.
Oh, well, that's so nice of you, Karen. Thank you so much. That's
all
very
right.
Kind. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You have an incredible toy collection, and when I started working with you years ago, my husband Jimmy Mack had some Star Wars action figures at his mom's house.
Mm-hmm.
We went to your house. He never stopped talking about it, so I don't know if I should thank you or kick you.
Oh, yeah. It's right in the middle, isn't it?
Because right after we left your house the next day, he went to his mom's crawl space, dug around to find out what was left, what she didn't sell. She had all the old Star Wars action figures. So because of you, the boys had to share a bedroom. And
you're welcome.
We have a Star Wars room.
I'm so glad I could help out. You know what happens is when people see it, it's like it serves as a time machine because it brings you back to when all that stuff, like the crew of the WGN Morning News was there even before we shot, and they're just going, oh, that's the Groovy Ghoulies. That's Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids. They're just going through all this old stuff, and it does. It turns you into a kid again.
Well, it explains a lot about you.
It does.
Because
it definitely does.
It's, you know, being a kid was the best thing on earth. It really was.
It was. And you know,
no pressures, all play.
Oh, it's the best. What happens is, like, my two favorite times were Christmas Eve and Christmas morning when you're opening toys and stuff like that. And I also loved Saturday mornings because all the cartoons were on. So all of a sudden now I have two rooms devoted to it. Always looks like Christmas morning. It always looks like Saturday mornings. And I love being in there. It just sparks me, you know?
You know what's weird, though, is you can keep the spirit of Christmas alive. As an adult, I'm completely 100% disappointed in Christmas now. It's not the same as it used to be.
No, because like what you said, you're an adult. There's responsibilities.
And you don't get the stuff you really wanted.
Right. Right.
Because, you know, we're adults. We can buy the stuff we really want.
Yeah, there's that. There's that.
But congratulations to you for keeping the kid alive. It's really wonderful
Thank you.
You know, my name is Wendy, and you are really the human Peter Pan.
Isn't that weird?
It's a nice little combo.
Yeah. Kevin and Steve are the Lost Boys, so they certainly tie into this as well.
And Stephanie Menendez with the perfect skin is Tinkerbell.
Yes. So everybody fits into the equation.
I never get to be Tinkerbell.
Maybe that's better, Steve. I'm just saying it might be better that way. All right. There's so much on today's show. It's just wall-to-wall stuff. We're thrilled that you're a part of it. Again, 312-981-7200. If you want to jump in at any point, it's Bill and Wendy WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. I don't know if you heard Steve mention, but 25 years ago today, right, Steve? It was 25 years ago today.
Yeah.
We had what was called. Now, what is the official title for what went on? The flooding. Is it just the Chicago flood?
The Great Chicago Flood, I think they call it. Right.
Oh, when all the underwater tunnels completely flooded and everything was floating?
Yeah.
That was horrific.
Things weren't floating. That's the weirdest thing about it is it was a disaster that was completely underground. People couldn't see, you know, you couldn't see it.
Right. I do remember
But they evacuated. The whole loop was evacuated, right, Steve?
Yeah. And you know, so there was these underground coal carts or different, you know, places where they would move product or things back in the day. And they were working on the bridge over the Kinzie Street Bridge. And a piling went through and ruptured, I guess, one of these tunnels, forcing water in. And, you know, I was out on the street in those days. So, excuse me, they'd take you to buildings.
Yeah.
And you'd go down three or four floors, and then they'd open up an elevator shaft, and you could just see water rushing underneath. It was like the Colorado River going over the rapids.
Right.
I mean, just this rushing, incredible water.
Did it smell awful? It must have, right?
I don't remember the smell. I just remember hoping to hell I didn't fall in the shaft. But, you know, it just was one of those, it was an amazing thing because they emptied the loop. All these buildings were shut down, and there really wasn't a lot. You couldn't see it. It wasn't like a tornado or
right.
a fire or even an earthquake where the damage was above ground.
I totally remember that. I can't believe it's 25 years ago, though.
I said that to Steve today. I said, that's impossible. That couldn't have been 25 years ago, but it was 25 years ago. The only
Which would have been what, about
1993?
Two?
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, two.
I didn't even try.
No, we wrestled with this earlier.
It took us 25 minutes to narrow it down to those 2 years. We were using protractors and slide rules.
Listen, math on the fly is not fun. That's why I have someone else tip the pizza guy. It's really hard.
But there was, I won't give the reporter's name, but there was a guy who was writing for the Sun-Times at the time. And one of the first news conferences, it was just a few blocks from here. I can see it out this window. We were in this building. I don't know why it was in this building. And it was night, and no one could, you know, it was hard to grasp what was going on.
Because,
again, there wasn't internet, you know, where you could research these things. You kind of were relying on people. And this one reporter just wigged out on the mayor or the city or someone because we're like, what's going on? We need to be told what's going on. You know,
did
and it's
he
like,
was he thinking there was something even worse going on than the flood, that this was leading to something bigger?
I think early on the city just wasn't maybe giving a lot of the answers that we hoped that they would.
I mean,
I think they were trying to figure it out too, because, you know, you think of it, Ray Orozco, the fire commissioner, superintendent, said they got calls just after six that water was in the merchandise mart. Well, they don't know then that it's coming from a ruptured tunnel on Kinsey Street under the river.
Yeah.
You know, there's no way to figure that out.
Isn't the guy who ruptured it going to call someone and say, oops?
Well, I don't think it happened that way. I think it just was sort of, you know, they were working on construction and it was underground. They were putting a piling in and, you know.
They might not have even known something had gone
wrong. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
All of a sudden the water starts going through, and then they got to figure out where the water's coming from and then do something with it.
Was Lower Wacker affected by this? I can't remember.
No, it was under the river. And all of that. They were, you know, deeper tunnels.
Well, Paul wants to jump in. Something was pretty flooded. What are your thoughts and your memories of this?
Yeah, so I remember I was in sophomore in high school. I'm 40 now, so I was a sophomore in high school, and we were hearing about it on the radio, and I remember getting home after school, and we saw that they were trying to shove mattresses before that, they said, we think we found the hole, because you saw this little swirly thing over the Kinsey Street Bridge.
Yeah,
and it looked
right.
so creepy, like everything that was in the river was getting sucked down this hole.
Like a giant sinkhole.
Oh, yeah. So they thought, let's shove mattresses down there. That didn't work. They tried shoving inflatable devices down there. That didn't work. So finally, I think it was a day or two later, they said, let's just start trying to, you know, shove concrete in there. And they finally got it sealed. But I'll never forget, we were coming from school that day, and the Howard Street Cave was actually flooding. There was water pouring out of the walls.
Mm. Oh, my God.
On the Howard Street Cave. And I thought, well, how is that possible? Because the water, it's almost at river level right there, I think.
Yeah.
So, but I'll never forget. I was so intrigued by that. So every time I go over the Kinsey Street Bridge, today, I'm like, wow, this is where all this insanity happened.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good point, because they couldn't just close the lid once they found the leak. They had to figure out a way to stop it. And I remember I was over there a couple of nights when they would, this slow process of putting that concrete in there and trying to stop things up.
Yeah, it was so surreal to just watch them do this. So, like I said, every day as a kid now, I go over there. And like I said, and I think you might have said it, Steve, I think the city forgot, like, all those tunnels existed down there. I mean, they had to shut all of them down, and they really made a vault of concrete down there now. So
every building manager, you know, think of it, every building manager who, you know, was ignored or shunned by the bosses for all these years,
all of a sudden
was the smartest guy in the building because he knew where the tunnels were.
Can I tell you, I'm not a fan of drones, but boy, would they have come in handy back then.
Sure.
Just because really no one saw what was happening. They needed, I guess, submarine drones back then.
Sure.
Couldn't figure it out, but I own a drone. We talked about drones before, but I'll never forget the day, how how ticked off Richie Daly was.
Yeah.
You know, just people, everyone's asking him questions, and I never saw him that angry before. And he just looked infuriated, like he didn't know what was going on.
He didn't, but, yeah.
No, but the Great Chicago Flood, man, that was something that I'm glad they're, well, I'm not glad we're talking about it, but, you know, no lives were lost in that, I think. But,
nothing, no.
Too bad they couldn't coordinate the Chicago Fire and the Chicago Flood. We wouldn't have had a problem.
Right.
It would have been perfect.
So, the Great Chicago Irrigation.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank
appreciate
you, Paul.
It. Now, Steve, I asked you this earlier, but I'm very curious, because normally if there's a disturbance like that low, it affects the rat population, and I don't remember there being any stories about an excess of rats as a result of this. Do you?
Well, there really aren't many rats in the city of Chicago.
No,
Bill,
three.
So,
there's
right.
a total of three.
And I think the
you
three...
named them, didn't you?
Yeah.
I think they were playing with your toys earlier today.
Gus is
no,
on the line.
I don't remember the answer to that, Bill. They must have been. They must have been running all over the place.
You would think.
Hi, Gus. What do you remember? Oops.
They've been quite well, and I also remember a documentary about it. The pylon had punctured the tunnel ceiling months before, and it was identified by one of the engineers and as a possible risk, but the bidding process took so long for them to get somebody to repair it, you know, it went on, you know, unattended for months, and then it exploded, and that one engineer for the city, he became the fall guy for this, even though it wasn't his fault. He had said, hey guys, we got to fix this, but it took a month to get a bid for the project, and it caved in.
It's all coming back to me. I'm really remembering this in bits and pieces.
I don't remember the months part, but I do remember that guy, and I won't even name him because he did, I think, get a bum
but
rap.
But you remember his name, right?
Oh, yeah. And I think he was supposed to inspect it, and he hadn't noticed it. Or I mean, that was my recollection, too.
Wow. Good memory, Gus.
Well, it was in the Tribune maybe a couple of years ago when the guy passed. They had a little article about him.
Oh, did they?
Just the guy that, yeah, they did, yeah.
And they exonerated him, right? They admitted it wasn't really his fault. He was just a fall guy on it, was it?
I don't know that they did.
No?
Well, you know, when does the Daily Machine ever exonerate anybody?
Not too often.
Everybody, somebody's got to look. A hole in the river.
Thanks, Gus.
Thank you, Gus.
Have a good weekend.
Guys, thanks a lot.
A weekend because we're off tomorrow.
Yes.
Because all day I'm like, I can't eat meat. It's Friday. And my kids keep going, it's Thursday. We're not on tomorrow.
Right.
So
right.
Rick Hogan, I believe, will be filling.
He'll be filling in.
Will he be streaming as well?
I'm hoping he will. Yeah.
He has to pick up the baton and do the stream as well.
You get full service with him. Yeah.
All right. Naked and Afraid. That's going to be the name of my book.
A pop-up book.
Bill.
I don't get it. I just said it. I don't understand it.
All right. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We have a couple of survivalists, I guess we'll call them. We have Matt Wright in the studio, Chance Davis. Chance, you are on the regular season of Naked and Afraid. And Matt, you are going to be doing Naked and Afraid XL.
That's correct.
Chance, that's kind of a slam to you that he gets an XL by his
name. What's
with that? Oh, I'm a newbie to the group. Everybody else is veterans. So.
For people who have not seen the show, the premise is exactly as the title implies. Yeah. You guys are naked and sometimes afraid.
Yep. Yeah. You're afraid often because you're naked.
Yes.
And that's the nature of the beast is getting stripped of your bare everything.
How do you train for that?
Well, you know, there's about everything you could possibly do will still not give you actual training for it. But... you know, I actually went out and I hunted naked.
You did?
And to give myself kind of a little bit more comfort when I would be hunting naked out in the Amazon.
Yeah.
Nature boy, at one
and
with
it,
nature.
And I think it helps because you got so many distractions when you're naked. That's the part. Like, everything's exposed. Every footstep is a step into treacherous ground. So it's the more you can do it, the better you get with it.
Yeah.
It's hard enough doing survival skills, but you're just so vulnerable naked. I mean... imagine if you guys were sitting here naked right now. Wouldn't that be weird for
Wendy
you?
Or...
shut up. But, I mean, so you're used to being naked now. Is it still going to feel weird if you were sitting here naked?
No.
Really?
It wouldn't at all.
No. Yeah.
You've broken down the barriers, Chance.
Yeah, well, you get used to it. And
do you really?
Out there, it felt better because you sweat more when you have clothes. They get dirty. You smell, but... when you're naked, just jump in the water, swim around a little bit, throw some charcoal on, you're good.
And there's other naked people around you.
So for my 21 day, I had just a partner. And
just one.
It's a female. Yep.
Yeah.
And then on the XL, which will be premiering April 23rd, that's a whole group of people. That is the all-stars, essentially, that have done the 21.
Yeah.
And with that is a is people that you may have seen them on a previous, you know, I saw some of them on their previous episodes.
Yeah.
But I still never met them. And then all of a sudden you walk through the jungle and bam.
Yeah.
Naked. Does
it make it
people.
Better that there's more naked people, or is it better to just be naked by yourself?
It took me maybe 30 minutes and I almost forget everybody's naked.
Oh, really?
It's you become just in like this really this native savage state of existence. Yeah. And everyone's naked. You really kind of forget about it.
What
it's,
if you got aroused? What would happen?
That was my question. Well, I'm glad you asked
wanted
it.
Me to ask
if you
that,
got aroused, that's a good time, you know, to hunt. Yeah. You know, best to hunt.
You got around. A spear.
Yes, yeah. You do. You're like a human sundial. People go, what time is it? Oh, look, it's 3:15.
And I would say for most of us guys, it goes into survival mode. All of us goes into survival mode.
Yeah.
And that it doesn't. You don't really get the aroused.
You don't.
Well, it's because you're surviving. You're not just sitting there at a bar having a drink. This is like heavy-duty hard work.
And it hides. I mean, I don't know about you, Chance, but I swear my body was like, hey, I need to hide it as much as possible.
Well, your body's protecting it, too,
let's
though.
Not draw attention to it.
Right.
So it's one of those things.
Do you use mud and stuff in like rubbing it on you, like women to cover their areolas or something?
No. My partner, she used charcoal just to cover up the smell of her armpits, which I didn't even smell to begin with.
So you're not allowed to bring deodorant or any kind of toiletries at all?
No luxuries.
Just charcoal.
21 days, no shower.
Oh, that's not good.
Felt like a
ranger. Wow.
I couldn't do it for 10 minutes, let alone 21 days, and now how many days are you going to do it, Matt?
And then the XL is 40 days.
Wow.
And it's a big difference between 21 and 40 is the fact that 21 days you can kind of survive off almost anything, but 40 days if you don't have everything together you will start to get malnutrition and you know you could potentially you know die of malnutrition. And
so they give you nothing in terms of food. You have whatever you're eating. You have to find it and hunt it and bring it home.
Exactly, yeah. And wow. it's you're also hunting it with the camera crew kind of following you around. So yeah. it's tough.
Yeah. See, I would be begging the camera guy, please give me the Snickers in your pocket, please.
Yeah, they've got food. What?
So satisfying.
They're a few yards away, and they've got stuff.
You know, Chance even talked about possibly eating one of the crew members.
Oh, really?
Yeah, towards the end of it, I got so hungry, I thought with my knife I might have to go prison style with one of the crewmen.
Like your parents watching you on TV without your clothes on? Are you okay with that?
Yeah, you know, oddly enough, my folks didn't even like bat an eye. They were just like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. And I was like, what do you mean that makes sense? Why would that make sense? Why do you think I should be running around naked in the jungle surviving? But they were just like, yeah, okay. And my mom always says, well, I saw your butt when you were a little kid. It's the same. And I was like, that's kind of the same, but it's...
Not the butt really, part, but not the front part.
And it's blurred, the rest of it. Yeah. So that makes it a little better.
They blur it magically on TV. Your parts aren't blurred. That'd be weird.
Yeah.
they use some sort of process to work.
Okay. In real life, they're not. Okay, that's better.
Were you guys Boy Scouts or anything that made you want to try this? I mean, you know, there are people who love to camp, who love to be survivalists. Did you do that before you were on the show at all?
I was a Boy Scout for a while at a residential facility where I'm a staff member now. And then I was Army Ranger, so you go to Ranger School and you have a little bit of survival techniques that you're introduced to.
Did the place where you're working, Chance, say, we've got a business, we'd almost appreciate it if you weren't on TV without your clothes on, or were they all for it?
They were super excited, super encouraging. Yeah.
Matt, what about you? Were you a Cub Scout or anything?
For the most part, I lived this kind of lifestyle, except for the naked part. But my entire life I've spent out in golden nature. So it was always, I was surviving as a little kid. It's just like my hobby and my passion. So this was just another extension of any adventure I've ever done. It just happened to be that this one's naked and being filmed.
Yeah.
But it was really, to me, it was very natural, very, very organic. I actually own a company where I take people on survival classes. And so for me, it was just like, well, if I'm going to teach people how to survive, I should make sure these skills that I think I have now work. And no better way to test them than completely naked and at foreign land that you've never seen before.
I know you're from Colorado, and where we go in Breckenridge, they always tell us, the ski people say, a couple times a year they have these skiing events where nobody wears any clothes. Have you heard of this or participated?
I've heard of it. I've never participated. I'm not necessarily a naked. I don't run too much naked. But there is times where I'm like, I'm gonna have to get some sun. I'm gonna fish naked today. And, there's times where I'm like, I'm going to walk around barefoot naked to get ready for the show. And It's a.
I put clothes on in the shower. Yeah. I wear some pants
just to make sure,
just to be safe.
I would imagine our news guy Steve Bertrand has mentioned this in the past. I think he was talking about being on the train. If everybody was naked, you'd get used to it, and it wouldn't be weird anymore.
I think it would solve the nation's ills.
That is what you said.
But where would you put your pass, Steve? Because I have to bring a pass on the train.
I'll give you time to think about it.
All right.
You have to wear a lanyard.
Right.
Or the satchel.
Right. Yeah,
the man purse. Come on, fanny packs are coming back.
That satchel we have on the show there, it's one of those that's a... it becomes a little everything for us.
What's in there? What are you allowed to have in there?
What's in there actually is it carries our microphone equipment because we are very rural and the camera crew is not with us directly. That way they're able to catch the audio of whatever we're doing. But... other than that, it becomes kind of our, like, I know for us guys, it definitely becomes like our protector for our junk.
Yeah.
And it's a...
technical terms for people listening.
For our... Yeah. And it's a... it's just kind of that nice little, like, place to, you know, put stuff. It's just the...
Right.
See why we have a purse?
And it's... That burlap bag is... it's made of rough burlap, people. So just to kind of give you an idea, like, it's not a comfortable thing to wear.
Itchy.
But in terms of what you can carry during the show, they give you a knife, right?
Well, you bring your own knife.
Yeah.
And what else? And for the XL, you bring your own knife and a survival item.
Yeah. Grapefruit spoon.
I got to bring a bow on this one. Yeah. And I'm very proficient with a bow, so I got to bring a bow and to hunt with. And people will bring whatever kind of other item they're real comfortable with.
I'd bring mascara.
Would you bring mascara?
I can't be seen without mascara. I'd look like James Spader.
Yeah.
That could be handy for something.
So what's it like? This is probably the longest either of you went without a cell phone in a long time. Is that, you get used to that really quick?
I did a lot of security contracting in Afghanistan, so no cell phones.
They don't allow those there, right?
Multiple combat deployments, no cell phones, and I actually prefer that where I live now in the Virginia mountains. There's no Wi-Fi.
Oh, it makes life easier, doesn't it?
I loved it.
Yeah.
All right, so the hardest thing you had to do, I would bet, starting a fire. Isn't that really hard to do? How many times did it take you to do that?
The fire it's kind of crazy. It gives you a little magnitude of how bad that place is to survive because fire barely survives. And you will have a raging inferno of a fire. You look away and it is dead. And I've never seen a place like it. It's hard to find a place that's that bad for a fire, but the wood just doesn't really burn right. The moisture in the air kills the fire. It's a hard place to start a fire, a hard place to keep it going, and it's also hard to collect firewood because there's not that much dead stuff. It's all rotten. So,
what's the temperature swing? What's the coldest and the hottest it was where you guys were?
Like 70s down to 50s.
Yeah, that's not terrible. Yeah.
Well, when you're naked, 70 is cold, kind of chilly.
Yeah,
when it gets to
60s
and in the mid 50s, it is downright cold.
Yeah.
And it's one of those, you wouldn't think the jungle would be hot, or be cold. You think it'd just be hot and you'd be sweating your butt off. But during the day, you're hot.
Yeah.
At night, you get cold.
Do you get hangry?
I get very hangry. I got to the point where I would have to tell my partner, I'm going to leave from 8 to 12 and go off and collect firewood just so I wouldn't be hangry against her. So I'd come back, I'm sorry, I'm not normally like this. I'm just really hungry.
I can't imagine, like, your stomach growling. Really, you're literally feeling like you're starving. Does that inspire you? Does it help you gather stuff?
For me, I'd never been introduced to being that hungry. So on day 7, we hadn't really collected much of anything to eat. And I didn't feel like I could move. My body was just weak, and I didn't understand why. I hadn't been on some long military movement or some physical exertion, and I was just dead tired, and that was a really stark realization for me.
Are you scared when you fall asleep? Because I'd be worried about all the critters crawling all over me.
Did
you encounter crazy animals? Were there strange animals out there?
There's anaconda, puma.
Oh, really?
Wild hogs.
Also naked? Those guys are also naked.
Yeah, they're all naked, but they...
all the animals.
You become bait pretty quick for these things, and it's... every bug out there, I swear, it's one of the most biodiverse places on Earth where we were surviving. And because of that, they say there's more bugs in every 2.5 acres there, variety-wise, than there is in the entire U.S. combined.
Oh, my God.
Well, that's a huge variety of bugs.
Yeah, it is.
And most of those bugs will bite you.
Some of them tastier than others?
There's some tasty ones. There was a cricket the size of, I'm talking cricket. It's more like a small pet. And they call it kind of a spiny lobster, is how they refer to it. But is a
didn't taste like lobster.
It's kind of like peanut butter. It's a it's actually, but it's pretty delicious. But it's about a 4 to 5 inch long cricket, and that becomes like, oh, if you find one of those, it's like, yes, scored. You
that's
know,
good
delicious.
News to find that. Wow.
So the first time you ate that peanut butter tasting cricket, it was probably did you want to gag?
Oh no. That was like,
really,
yes.
You were that
we're
hungry.
Happy.
I thought it tasted like popcorn myself, yeah. And I loved it because prior to that, I'd been eating little baby frogs that I would find on the ground. So once I had that, it was like, sweet, popcorn in the jungle.
So then when you come back to civilization, what's the first thing you like? Is there a place you go, huh, enough with the crickets and the frogs, I got to have this. What did you go to?
Oh, so as soon as I got out of the jungle, I drank a jar of peanut butter in 10 seconds, and then I couldn't stop eating, so I would eat 4 times a day. I'd always go to restaurants, and I would order 3 entrees, and most times the restaurants would be surprised and give me a free meal. So
really?
I put on 70 pounds
did
the month
you?
After.
Yep. Really?
I just couldn't stop eating.
So you lost a bunch during, mm-hmm. and then just gained it all back a short time later.
Best 70 pounds of your life, wasn't it?
Oh, it was amazing. Yeah. Oreo pie.
Without a doubt, it puts some psychological twist into your brain that says, like, when you find food, eat it.
Yeah.
And when you get back, your brain tells you, I need to eat whenever I can find it.
Uh-huh.
And then you go to the grocery store, and you're like, well, hell, there it is. I'm going to hunt all this stuff. And so you hunt all that food at the grocery store, throw it in a shopping cart, and you're still not satisfied.
Well, back to the hunter and gatherer phase, you don't know when your next meal is going to come.
Oh, definitely. And that's actually part of the warrior culture was actually always to hunt hungry. The actual warriors supposedly would starve themselves for days before a hunt. They said it would make them a better hunter.
Yeah, right.
And I would have to agree that once you get to the point where you're actually truly hungry, everything becomes heightened. Every sense you had, your smell, your vision, everything is now in tune to make you a better hunter.
Because your body needs to eat.
And it's your body's survival of saying, hey, you're hungry, we're going to make you better. And out there in the jungle, I would sit there with that bow in my hand, and I would literally feel almost out of body experience. I felt like I was another warrior in the jungle that's been there in his entire life, and we're going to hunt.
Do you think everybody would have that feeling, or is that just the way you are?
I think eventually everybody would. Everybody, if you're put in there long enough, some people's breaking point may be a day, some people's maybe a month, but you will eventually turn into what I would refer to as your native spirit.
Yeah.
Because you're out there and you're trying to survive. That's the bottom line. That's what everyone has in common.
Yep.
All right, we've got Matt Wright and Chance Davis in studio, two of the stars of the Discovery Channel's Naked and Afraid. We'll talk more next. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, we're wrapping up here. Discovery Channel, Naked and Afraid, on now on Sundays. Chance Davis from Naked and Afraid. And then next Sunday, April 23rd, the premiere of Naked and Afraid XL featuring Matt Wright. We don't have a lot of time. A lot of people are texting, what did you use for toilet paper? That's something that's bothering
leaves.
Everybody.
Bunnies.
Bunnies.
Bunnies. You got to catch a bunny.
Oh,
it's
no.
The only way to do it.
That's wrong.
I'll be back in a minute. I got to go catch a bunny.
Are you always aware of how many days into it and how many days you have left? Is that always in your head somewhere?
You notch it on a tree.
I bet.
For the most part, and keep track.
Yeah.
And for bathroom, after the first time I went, I don't remember going until at least day 15.
Is that right? Yeah.
You're just so starved and you don't have a lot of fiber.
Nothing being processed.
Oh, wow.
But you're not putting a lot in, so not a lot's coming out.
Yeah.
Less bunnies needed that way.
See, I would just have trouble, like, I can't even excuse myself to go to the bathroom in front of you, and mm-hmm. I work with you all the time. I can't imagine just being out and about. What do you say? I'll be right back, or leave me alone for a while? You
know, 6 steps, drain the main vein, and then come back to camp.
All right, super quick, a great question from Laura. Laura, we have 30 seconds, so what's your question?
Okay, I'm just wondering about what you're allowed to take. Now, one of the best things I always said was the duct tape boy. He made shoes. Hmm. He made a tent. He made everything out of that duct tape.
Mm-hmm.
How do you decide what to take?
It's a good question. The it's a hard decision because when you're looking at, say, 40 days on the XL here, duct tape isn't going to last you long enough. Duct tape is good for about a week or so. Then it's going to start falling apart. It's such heat in that environment.
Okay, so don't you kind of shoot for like a pan to boil water?
Yeah, you want to have something that's going to last the entire time. So fire starter's definitely needed. panned boil water, and something to catch food of some sort, whether it be a cast net or
bow. And do you
know
what your partner takes so you don't
take
out
a fire starter? No, you don't know, so it's kind of a high-stress situation trying to figure
out. You could both bring a pot, and that would be bad.
Yeah. And it's, you just hope for the best.
Laura, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
Naked and Afraid, and now on Sundays on Discovery. And please tune in a week from Sunday, April 23rd, for the premiere of Naked and Afraid XL. Matt Wright, Chance Davis, good luck to you.
Definitely. It's going to be good, guys. Make sure you watch it. It's going to be some pretty epic stuff, I think.
You got it.
We have a bunny out in the green room for you.
A parting gift, a lovely parting gift. Thank you, guys. A quick break. News is next. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill Lefkowitz, Wendy Snyder. Dane Neal is back. Weren't you just here yesterday?
I feel like I was.
You have unfinished business, Dane.
Right. It's like you can only hope to contain him into one, certainly.
Well, usually we bring you on every other Wednesday and we discuss food, the world of food.
Right.
But sometimes when there's royalty around, we make a special arrangement.
Well, yes. When something big, when there is a shift in the force of the food world, then you need to get involved. And when we've got more than a little, no pun intended, home cooking heading into one of the biggest shows on Food Network, you got to recognize it. And so Iron Chef Gauntlet is happening. And when there comes to titles in the food world, there are some, very few, that kind of define you and change who you are. And then from that moment forward, you will be referred to and introduced as an Iron Chef. And so we've got two great chefs from Chicago that are participating in the program. We've got Sarah Gruenberg from Spiaggia, and the Monteverdi has been getting so many great accolades. And then Steph Izard, of course, right here, Girl and the Goat, Little Goat, Duck Duck Goat. It's great to have them involved.
Thanks for being here, ladies. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us. I think we're both really excited to have gone through this craziness together, so it's fun to be here together.
Yeah.
Do you get nervous when you're going to have to go for the challenge again?
Oh, yeah. I think it's something
you really forever
have nightmares about, too.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I do. I don't know about you.
It's intense. You know, it's like takes you out of your normal day-to-day and throws you into this, like,
hardcore.
This other alternative universe that doesn't exist in normal life. So
that's true.
You wonder how it is because you have chefs, and we've talked about it, that, you know, the chefs are the new rock stars. So there's this level of kind of scrutiny and appreciation and fan base that goes along with what used to be just kind of an art. And so Sarah has gotten so many accolades and been such a great chef and done it more on the chef side and not as much on the TV side, where, you know, Stephanie has been their top chef. You know, she was almost a television star before she got a lot of the extra kind of accolades on the chef side. So Sarah, I wanted to ask you, is that something that you're looking at it now where you've had the success, but it's a different game when you're doing it on TV?
Oh, man. I think that cooking on TV is just, it's fun in general. It makes you think outside your box. And it makes me a better chef to cook on TV. It's, you know, you can be a great chef in your restaurant and have a team. But when you go on and you're by yourself competing, it changes the game for sure.
What do you do differently knowing that it's being televised as opposed to just in the privacy of a kitchen? How do things play out differently?
And I don't know if it plays out differently. It just means that you really got to make sure it looks good and tastes good.
And you cook with mascara on that.
Yeah. We're like all done up, which is fun.
Yeah. A lot of the TV chefs have anger issues, I've noticed. What's going on? Why are they so upset about things so quickly?
Oh, I don't know.
I think there's a lot of chefs. I think that's changing a little bit, but there's still some angry chefs out there. I know one of the first chefs I worked for was a very angry chef and screamed at us all the time. And I always thought, that's not motivating me to want to do better for you.
No.
So I learned early that, well, I don't think I am that way anyways, but that I didn't want to be that way. But it's just some guys. They just still do that.
Yeah.
Even on the TV side, there isn't a lot of shows where you have, you know, Alton Brown there doing the play-by-play at the same time.
Right.
And Iron Chef, I know, it's a whole another level. It's one thing to have the food as entertainment, but this is extreme competition with a lot of street cred, a lot of, you know, just pride on the line. And so, Stephanie, I know that you've done it. You've participated in it before. How much has that – because I know it's a little bit of a different game as far as the format this year, but how much did that help you as far as preparing for it?
I think it helped me in just motivating to want to go on the show. I did a challenge years ago against Michael Simon, and he beat us because he was an Iron Chef. And I came back really upset, and my sous chef said to me, he's like, well, that's why it's called Iron Chef and not called Iron Challenger.
Right.
I was like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. So I think I wanted to get back into the world and see if I could kind of prove it to myself. That's something that always drives me. So just the opportunity to possibly be an Iron Chef was really intriguing.
And for both of you guys, I mean, there's a lot of weight. There's chefs from around the country here, and of course, chefs from all over, you know, the world that participate in one Iron Chef, but kind of representing and being indigenous Chicago personalities. Do you feel extra pressure to do this for the home team? Or, yeah, or did you
for
never...
sure. Look at, you know, it's like you're wearing your Cubs hat. You know what's happening tonight with the Blackhawks. It's like Chicago is a very proud city of our sports teams. And like, I remember after winning Top Chef, I walked into a bar and people started cheering like I had just won some sort of like sporting event. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I'm a very competitive person. So I think we both feel that support from the city of like just loving and supporting all the chefs and all the restaurants. So hopefully we do the city proud. We can't tell you guys what happened, but we'll see.
Yeah. Chicago is a place where we both decided to, you know, plant roots and open our restaurant.
Thank God.
And thank you. And so it's, you know, Chicago's the best city in the U.S. in my opinion, and a place that I want to cook, and it's fun to do that.
All right, so you're comfortable in your own kitchen, and now you're going to be out of your element a little bit. You're getting the adrenaline going, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. You walk into a kitchen, and you don't even know where the bowls are or where the, you know, how to use the stove. I think it gets you, you feel your heart racing, and you... You know, you want to make something delicious, but making something delicious out of your kitchen, like Sarah said, without your team, it can be a little bit more challenging. So you just kind of, you know, thoughts racing through your head. What am I going to make? Is it going to be delicious? I don't know. I always just think like season it well, cook it well, and just hope for the best.
Execution is key. I guess it's really hard because you want to be make a dish that's the most exciting and the most impressive to the judges. But yet at the end of the day, if you forget to season and cook it properly, it doesn't matter how you know, creative it is.
Right. If it looks good but tastes like crap, presentation is definitely part of it. All things are important, but I don't know, taste is much more important, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you do, like people say, you taste first with your eyes because you do see the plates first. I know that both of us are a little bit more on the rustic side with our plating somewhat, relying on the taste, but you definitely see it first. You need color. You need to get excited to eat it. But then if it doesn't back it up with flavor, you got nothing.
Yeah.
And Sarah, of course, it's coming up on the Food Network 8 Central. This Sunday is the premiere. You've obviously seen the show, been a fan of the show. You've got a new format. So explain a little bit about how it's different with the three Iron Chefs now.
Oh, man. So there's seven of us that go on to compete, and we compete in day-to-day challenges. And then the winner of the first challenge has to choose someone else to go into the secret ingredient showdown with compete.
Adding a little bit of like drama to the show where we were sort of, oh, well, I'm going to choose you because you're the best and I want to see if you go down. So adding, you know, they have to add some drama to the show a little bit.
The secret ingredient showdown is what exactly? What goes on in the
secret ingredient? Secret ingredient showdown.
It's mayhem.
Is it? Yeah.
Three dishes in 1 hour by yourself without any... without any help is hard, especially running around a kitchen. And they set up the kitchen, I think, on purpose, where everything was really far away. So you're just running around like a...
But that's to their advantage because it creates conflict, and that's better. That's why they're doing that. Yeah.
They want to see you sweat.
And it would be kind of boring if everything was right there.
Yeah,
you just reached
out. Can I get my tongs, please? Where's the whisk? Right. Where's the whisk?
It'd be like golf. Right. She's going for the whisk.
All right. I purchased some Wusthof knives because I wanted the best knives ever. I cut my finger one time on a dull knife. How do I get those things sharpened? Can you ever get a knife to sharpen as well as when you first purchased it?
You can. It's definitely an art. I have actually one of my chef de cuisines like really loves doing that. So I'll just kind of slide my knife over near him and be like, oh, it just seems kind of dull today. And wait for him because he can do it so well. But it's something we, you know, learn when you're young in culinary school and you kind of have to keep up on it. It's not my forte. So sometimes I pass it along.
Do you go really quickly back and forth on the sharpening tool or slowly?
So that's the steel, and that just is what kind of sharp like straightens the blade. To get a really sharp, you have to use a stone.
Oh God!
So get a stone, Wendy.
It's a whole thing. Yeah.
Go to Northwest Cutlery.
Yeah.
All right. Cutlery. They sharpen my knives.
Oh yeah, great. All right. Northwest Cutlery. On Lake Street.
Or just get a knife ninja like Stephanie is.
Yeah, that's easy.
You can bring them to Grill and Goat, is what she's saying.
Yeah.
Everyone bring your knives.
Janet, DuckDuckGo, we'll sharpen your knives.
All right.
$6 a knife.
We'll take a quick break and then more Iron Chef talk if you want to jump in. 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder. Dane Neal won't seem to go away. We've done everything we can. We've changed the locks. He keeps finding a way in.
I know it's good for you.
Right. Today, two of the stars of Iron Chef, Stephanie Izzard and Sarah Gruneberg, are both here in studio with us, and we're talking food.
Well, see, this is Iron Chef Gauntlet. So it's all the things that you know and love about, let's say, the early Japanese version that came out in the early 90s and then the mid-2000s Iron Chef America version. And so this is that kind of next level where they've decided to take this. You add the title of Iron Chef to it, but you tweak it a little bit, and it's different. And I wonder, Bill, when you look at kind of either baseball or football in the different generations, you know, they've got the, what is it, the dead ball era, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. Do you guys, as people who have, you know, been in and around it, you've certainly worked with a lot of them, you've been on the show, Stephanie, when you look at this, are you going to see this title of Iron Chef as slightly different, slightly more difficult? Because you look at maybe some of the NBA players of the 40s mm-hmm. or 50s, did they even exist? Probably couldn't beat today's teams, right?
Probably not.
So how do you compare the eras?
You know, it's tricky. I think when they told us what the show is going to be, and I kept saying, like, what does the word gauntlet even mean? And then they described it and show the chefs that you need to beat to become the next Iron Chef. I was like, oh, okay, I get it. I don't even need to look the word up anymore. That is a gauntlet. Yeah. So definitely challenging. I mean, Bobby Flay, Michael Simon, and Morimoto are...
Yeah. That's intimidating.
Yeah, you know, just a little bit.
Yeah.
I always even think when you go on that show, though, you're really competing against yourself. And so to get out of your head is really a huge...
The biggest challenge.
Yeah, the biggest challenge. It doesn't necessarily matter who you go up against. It matters if you can physically do it and push yourself to do it.
Go on.
Well, I was just wondering, like, so one of the biggest challenges in kind of the world of business and in the culinary world is just to run a successful restaurant. I mean, that's one of those things. It's a very hard business. It's tough to do. And then I think once, and I wanted to get both of your viewpoints on this, once you get to the point where you add in that level of celebrity, I think everyone can understand it's going to draw some more people in, but it's also going to draw in a lot more kind of pressure, not only on what it is that you do and what comes out of the kitchen, but also just on your time. I mean, you're here. You're not like recipe testing or doing some other things. And so do you see it as, I mean, it's got to be a benefit, right? But is it a double-edged sword?
I think so. When I went on Top Chef, I remember getting ready to open Girl on the Go. And I just remember my partner saying something like, we don't want the headlines to say Top Chef ? I was like, yeah, I don't either. The pressure's on so much more. When I opened my first restaurant when I was 27, I hadn't done, you know, nobody knew who I was. And so it's like, oh, wow, this little 27-year-old girl, like, this place is great for that.
Yeah.
But once you've been on TV and people's expectations go up, then they want, you know, fine-tooth comb and just looking for something to... you know, find wrong, I think, sometimes.
People like to nitpick, don't they? People are
unfortunately,
mean.
Unfortunately, yes.
What's the love for the goat? Why all the goats?
My last name is a type of goat in French. Izard is a mountain goat from the Pyrenees Mountains. And so when I found that out, it just seemed like... My first restaurant was called Scylla, S-C-Y-L-L-A, which nobody could pronounce. But goat seemed like something everybody could handle.
I love it.
When you're a chef in a restaurant, that's one thing. But then when you go back home and you have to prepare a meal for just yourself or maybe you and somebody else, is that a thrill at all? Or is that a come down after working as a chef in a restaurant?
Oh, that's my hobby.
Yeah?
I mean, I think that most chefs will tell you that we love to cook at home as the first part of our career and why we are chefs now. You have to have that love of wanting to do it. And, you know, at home I can have wine and a cocktail while I do it.
Doesn't that make cooking more fun?
That's my... That's my hobby.
You don't have a wine and cocktail at Monteverde all the time?
Not yet. Maybe after year five. We're still in the going up stage of the roller coaster.
That's what introduced me, though. I always like to cook, but I love to cook now and take time because it's fun to drink along with cooking. That's okay to do, isn't it?
The music's playing. Yeah. It's a afternoon...
You always want to cook with wine that's when you're using it in a sauce, something that's good enough to drink, not just because it makes the sauce taste better, but then it's like some for me, some right. for you.
Yeah, for sure.
Is there an ingredient you guys keep in your back pocket because you go, yeah, vanilla improves everything or ginger is always going to make it better? Is there something you have like that?
I think every chef has those things. Mine's fish sauce. I love it. I can't go without it.
For me, it's probably like really good extra virgin olive oil.
Really? Yeah.
That's EVU. Remember EVU. You learned that?
Right.
EVOO.
Yeah.
Bill, what's yours? Pixie sticks?
Just a little bit of the great pixie stick. Never hurts anything.
I might try that.
This has become, we always talk about this when Dane is here with guests. This is a world-class city for food. You can get any kind of food and really, really good. So where do you go? Not your own restaurants, but where do you go when you just go, I got to taste something really delicious?
I go to Monteverde.
Yeah.
Wow, I do. Nice. My husband and I live in the neighborhood. We don't leave the West Loop very often. I'm like having hives being far away from it right now.
And this is far.
But, you know, Monteverde and Elche, I think, are two of my favorites in the neighborhood. It's just the West Loop has become like the epicenter for amazing food, I think, in the city. So we're really fortunate. We can just kind of stumble out after work and find something delicious.
Always good. Sarah, you?
Absolutely. I mean, I really am loving RL, kind of an old classic. Chicago restaurant that you slip in there, you sit in the booth, you have wine, kind of have like a long lunch. Good crab cake.
I like the theme to your answers is wine. I think we just should like get some wine for the rest of the afternoon.
I can't believe I took like 4 years of French and didn't know Izard was a goat.
I didn't know that either until I was like 30-something right before getting the restaurant open. And I was like, well, that's awesome. And I should probably learn how to cook goat now because I've never even eaten it before. So now it's become such a thing at the restaurants. And we have figured out how to do so many things with a goat just like you do with a pig, which is fun.
People love it and are so familiar with where you are in that compound of different restaurants, Grilling the Goat, Little Goat, Duck Goat. But for Monteverde, like, where can people find you? And they're going to see you on TV, obviously, Sarah, but where can they come out and enjoy some of the stuff before you get into the wine drinking while you're cooking days?
I'm going to sound like a lush. I mean, I'm really at the restaurant. I work on the specials. I cook sometimes on the back of the line when need be. I'm really still hands-on there. So,
and what's the address? And the
we're website? At 1020 West Madison. The address is, the web is monteverdechicago.com. And we're right at Carpenter in Madison.
For kids listening or maybe adults who want to become a chef someday, it's a lot of work, a lot of hours, isn't it?
It is. It is. I think that now that chefs are on TV so much, it kind of glorifies it. And people forget that even those chefs, you know, the ones that are still in their restaurants are still sweating every day. And it's a hard business. And yeah, but it's still fun. Everybody in the restaurant industry is just crazy enough to make it really fun.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So the address of the restaurants, we talked about that. The address for Sunday night, 8 p.m. Food Network, mm-hmm. Iron Chef Gauntlet.
Mm-hmm.
Be there.
Everybody tune in. It's going to be exciting. Great to see both of you. Continued success to both of you.
Thank you. Really appreciate being here.
And Dane, you know, continued success to you, too.
Thanks so much.
Why see you tomorrow.
Thanks.
Yes, absolutely.
We'll see.
Stephanie, Sarah, we greatly appreciate it. And Dane, like I said, thanks again. We'll take a quick break. We've got news coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you love films, then Dean's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about hard points. Dean.
That evokes Wendy singing every week.
I know. I love that song.
Did you notice that?
Yes. It's hard not to sing along, Dean, you have to admit.
That's very, very true.
Yep.
Ask me where I am right now.
Where are you right now, Dean?
I'm in your living room.
I was just going to ask if you were at Bill Leff's house.
I'm in your house right now.
That should alarm me, but
again?
I'm fine with that.
Yeah,
somehow.
Well, if you knew what I was doing, you wouldn't be so calm.
By the way, our own Bill Leff was featured on the WGN-TV morning news this morning.
Right.
And we have, I guess Jeff Hoover has posted some clips, so we added them to our Facebook page. Listeners, in case you missed it, go to Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on Facebook and enjoy.
Yeah, featuring Bill's... literally
his real friends
incredible collection of collectibles.
Oh, thank you, Dean.
Just really
did
really
it shock you?
Cool. No, because I've been there.
Yeah,
I've
seen it firsthand.
Yeah.
And he was
I stole
shocked.
Some stuff when
yeah
I, when
I'm missing
I was there,
a, some of the best stuff yeah. is gone. I don't know where it went.
Some troll dolls I took.
That's weird.
Are those troll dolls or the Olsen twins? I can't tell the difference.
It doesn't either way, Bill, don't worry, they're doing fine. I take care of
worried.
Them like they're my own children.
I'm not worried. Dean, you'll have some inside information about this. Wendy and I were discussing it the other day. What's up with this might be feud, might not be feud between The Rock and Vin Diesel? Are they fighting? I don't want them fighting.
I think it was a more publicity stunt than actual animosity between the two. They're both professionals, and they've worked with bigger divas than either one of them. Now, I will say, in my own personal experience, The Rock, when we do interviews, always on time.
Yeah.
Always very friendly. Always very cooperative and nice. Vin Diesel, also very nice.
Yeah.
Also very friendly. I would bet a month's salary, if I was going to interview him, that he was going to be late, though.
Well, that's what they say started the feud, was that The Rock took issue with the fact that he'd show up an hour or an hour and a half late for things, for filming.
You don't get mad at me.
No, but no, of course
I'm
not.
I'm late.
Are you an hour and a half late?
Never an hour and a half late.
Like a minute late.
Right.
Yeah. Almost every time that I've interviewed Vin Diesel, and I like him. We have a very nice relationship and great. I've done great interviews. He's been very nice to me.
Yeah.
But he's always late. He is always, and I mean like two and a half hours, 3 hours, you're going to miss your plane kind of late.
Wow.
You know, and I like to get to my plane so I can get dragged off in time.
Of course you do. Of course you do.
I like to get there early. So
wear
I can
a longer shirt, will you?
Right.
But their plan is still, you know, they're doing a version of The Odd Couple. That's still on, right? They're not going to stop that.
No, as far as I know.
All right, good.
As far as I know, The Rock is still going to be Felix Unger. And Ben is...
Oscar Madison.
Oscar Madison.
I'd watch that.
That's going to be a great movie.
Ba-dun-da-da-da-da. You see them outside.
That'd be fun.
One throws a cigar on the sidewalk, and the other one throws them across the street.
Wouldn't that be fun? Dean, are they going to make a movie out of this guy getting dragged off the United flight? That seems like it should be a movie.
How do you not make a movie out of this whole mess?
I want to see that.
Did you see the press conference?
No, we've been working, but I knew there was a press conference. What went on at the press conference?
You know, it's just, you know, the lawyers setting up what they plan on doing and, you know, laying out their outrage at what happened. I saw... The doctor's daughter was on the dais.
Mm-hmm.
Some people that I didn't see speak because I was also working and paying attention when I could. But I saw it's Corboy, you know, it's like one of these law firms that you see advertising during Maury Povich.
Mm-hmm.
The Briskman brothers were busy.
Peter Francis Tracy's not in on this?
Apparently didn't get the contract on this.
Oh, no.
But, you know, fine law firm, I'm sure, here in Chicago. I just, you know, very familiar name. And, you know, they laid out, you know, what happened. Apparently the doctor suffered a concussion as a result of the skirmish.
He was
de-accommodating.
The what?
They're calling it a de-accommodation.
De-accommodation.
Well, they're they had the CEO said he had to reaccommodate him, but people are saying that he was deaccommodated from the plane, meaning removed. It's a polite way of saying.
Yeah, I
removed.
Say kicked off. I say dragged off the plane.
Dean, I got to ask you because I am saying that if I was asked to move, I would have done everything in my power not to get off that plane because I bought a ticket like everyone else. Would you have gotten up immediately? I sure wouldn't have.
I don't think so, but I also think that the security guards acted or police or whoever they were, the Department of Aviation people that physically grabbed him and pulled him out of the chair. I think before anything like that would have happened, I would have gotten up and
smart man.
And then Vin Diesel showed up an hour and a half later.
That's and said, "What's all the hubbub?"
Somebody call Felix Unger. Dun, 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 dun. We told him not to leave his wrappers from the peanuts in the front pouch.
I also have to ask you really quickly because we discussed this last week. Shia LaBeouf's movie was not doing well in England. They had sold three tickets at this time last week.
I've got new Shia LaBeouf information.
What's the info on Shia?
This is he's doing one of his stunts again.
Oh, is he?
You know, like
love that guy.
He sat in a window with a paper bag on his head in New York.
Yeah.
He did a marathon of watching his own movies. He had a camera fixed on him, did a live web feed of him watching his own movies. He stayed in an elevator for about 3 days, and people came and went from the elevator. Yesterday, he went to a cabin in a remote part of Finland where he will live for 30 days without any contact whatsoever with human beings.
Oh.
Speaking on behalf of all the rest of the human beings, I think we can say, thanks, Shia.
Thank you.
Thanks for the little break. We appreciate it. There's no way to reach him except by you have to go to a certain museum in Helsinki, and you can text him, and he can text you back, but that's the only way to communicate with him in any way. There is a live camera feed, but it's of the museum, so you only see people walking around a little log cabin that they've set up in the museum. Shia's not in it.
No.
But you see people walking around this log cabin. You have to imagine that Shia is in something similar.
So here's the question that must be asked then, Dean. When actors do this, and of course Joaquin Phoenix comes to mind immediately because he liked to do stunts like this, is this good for their career or does it make America get a little sour taste in their mouth when they do stuff like this?
I think that Shia LaBeouf doesn't care. He could care less one way or the other since this is the kind of thing that he does now. He likes... I don't think it even crosses his mind. Does this make me more marketable? Is this going to be more difficult for me to make a movie? Does this lessen my value My price tag if I go to make a movie again. He's just doing whatever he wants to do.
Yeah.
And part of me sort of admires that, and part of me thinks it's a little nutty.
Crispin Glover used to do this.
Right?
Joaquin Phoenix. These guys just thrive on that. People are talking about them, so I guess that's good.
Wasn't the Joaquin Phoenix one a big fake, though?
Yes.
That was for the documentary that they made where everybody thought he was nuts. And he went on David Letterman and was acting bizarre, and Letterman called him out on the whole thing. And then when the movie came out, it was revealed that the whole thing was just a joke. It was just, it was one big long acting job. I don't think that's the case with Shia LaBeouf. I think he really marches to the beat of his own drummer.
Didn't David Letterman say to Joaquin Phoenix after a whole half hour, "I really wish you could have been here tonight"?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
That's good stuff.
Two things made me really miss Dave this week. Seeing him induct Pearl Jam last weekend. If you haven't seen that, go on YouTube and listen to his 15-minute speech. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah?
And
from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
He was hilarious and touching and talked about how he didn't realize how much he missed the ringside seat to live music that he had every single night until he was hanging around all these musicians for rehearsal for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And, of course, the other day, Dave's mother died.
Yeah, that was sad.
Just outside of Indianapolis, 95 years old, and I always used to love whenever she was on. So I'm missing my Dave this week.
I know.
So I'm missing my Dave.
Believe me, we're all feeling it.
That's why I feel some comfort sitting here in your living room naked right now.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. We'll talk more with Dean Richards in just a little bit. It's Bill and a 20 on WGN. Did you get the dump button in time, Kevin? You did? All right. Dean Richards joins us from the WGN
TV News.
That's
funny because in my headphones it sounded like she said...
No, she didn't. We got it with the dump
unique
button.
Unique opening door we openings, you pervs.
That's not what you said.
Oh, man. There's going to be a long meeting. Dean's here to tell us what movies to see and which movies to avoid this weekend. Dean, let's start out with the movie we were discussing a little bit earlier, The Stars anyway, Vin Diesel and The Rock. They're back in The Fate of the Furious.
Can you believe there have been 8 movies on this franchise?
No.
Do you like this franchise at all?
I've never seen a minute of them.
No, you're kidding
I've
me.
I've never seen them. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to make of it. It's just fast cars, right? That's it?
Well, yeah, pretty much.
Is there more to it than that?
Explosions.
Yeah. Oh, then I'll start watching.
Shooting.
Yeah?
Yeah, shooting, swearing.
Yeah.
Speaking of, Wendy, how about
yes.
you?
Do you watch the Fast and the Furious
no.
movies? You don't either.
I have not seen a one.
Oh, look at you two snobs.
Yeah, we're snobs.
Yeah, we are.
Look at you two NPR-loving snobs. With your documentary about the life of the earthworm.
Right.
I'm right in the middle of the snob and the Fast and Furious.
I think these movies are so stupid. And
but that's good, right? That's what people want, is they just want them to be stupid, don't they?
At the same time, I find myself smiling during these and laughing and enjoying.
You are not a snob.
The stunts.
Yeah.
There's a part of me that's embarrassed that I'm sitting there, and I was actually looking forward to seeing this new one, Fate of the Furious, is what it's called. It's the 8th movie. I was looking forward to it because it is complete, total mind candy.
But wasn't the last one out about a week ago, Dean? They're like every week they have a new one.
It's been like a year and a half,
maybe. Right.
Something like that. And the last one was the one that
Paul Walker
partially finished before his death in a car crash, ironically.
So sad.
His two brothers finished some of his roles. Where they, shot from behind him.
And Nancy Walker did some scenes too, didn't she?
Walker, there was an unexplained bounty paper towel scene.
That's still
confusing. Haven't been able to get any clarity on, but that was there. in the last movie, Paul Walker, sort of decides he's had enough of all this, drives off into the sunset, and leaves this family of kind of rogue agents who are, get a call and they in this case, go to steal a bomb might be used to wreak havoc on the world. But except, and Vin Diesel has been part of this group along with Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Michelle Rodriguez.
Michelle Rodriguez is part of it. Tyrese Gibson, sort of the comedic value of it. Jason Statham.
Lamb Chop.
Also very funny. Ludacris, Ludacris Bridges.
Yeah.
Part of the franchise. They're a family, and that's a huge theme in this franchise is no matter what, you stick with family. No matter what, you have got the back of your family no matter what. Now, wait, you're going to be shocked
what?
When you learn Vin Diesel goes rogue.
Oh, no.
He goes rogue in this
Why
movie.
Why would he do that?
Well, it's unexplained for much of the movie, and if I told you right now, it probably would spoil the intellectual stimulation that you might get by this movie. But there's a good reason why Vin Diesel goes rogue, teams up with Charlize Theron, who is evil personified, in this movie. She wants to blow up a nuclear bomb to start a war, you know, between, you know, and in these days where the U.S. and Russia are kind of at each other, this is a little bit significant.
Hmm.
So the family, what's left of the family, are now pursuing Vin Diesel.
Mm-hmm.
Dominic Toretto is his character. So it's pursuits, and there are really kind of fantastic, not just car chases, but car stunts, wrecking balls being thrown from the top of buildings and taking out fleets of cars.
Wow.
These driverless cars now going wild. There are amazing visual stunts that go on, special effects in this movie that would put the smile on your face, that make you laugh. It's all completely improbable, completely ridiculous.
Sure.
But if you just you want to turn your mind off for you know, like
I do that every day,
couple of hours daily between 10 and noon.
Yeah,
when that happens.
Yeah, 10 and 1.
I say you're going to have some fun watching.
What's Dean's list
this
on
series.
This?
I'm giving it a Dean's List B.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
All
yeah,
right.
Giving
All
it a
right.
Dean's List B.
That's enticing.
I had a little fun. There's another movie that I'm actually going to see later that everybody is raving about. That's called The Lost City of Z.
Mm-hmm.
That stars Charlie Hunnam, who you may remember probably mostly from television. He's done several series on TVs.
He's the guy that was supposed to be in 50 Shades of Grey, but they axed him, right?
He got axed. He was
they axed him to not be in 50 Shades of Grey.
Sons of Anarchy. He was in Undeclared. He was in Queer as Folk. Very familiar face when you see him. But it's this movie is a true story about the famed British explorer Percy Fawcett, who on an exploration visit into the Amazon believes that he has found an undiscovered civilization
and
kind of dedicates his life to trying to find it at the expense of his family. So it's, you know, a professional versus personal conflict, but beautifully shot, I'm told. Really like a movie that might have come out in the 1960s, very Lawrence of Arabia, like I'm told, an amazing story and beautifully shot. So I haven't seen it yet. I'm going to see it tonight. But the early word on this is that it's absolutely spectacular.
The Lost City of Z.
Of Z.
Excellent.
Yep.
Thank you, Dean.
Thanks, Dean.
Have a delightful day.
And you too. That's Dean Richards, everybody. You can watch him on the TV if you like. On the
you
WGNT.
Too.
Yeah.
And if you miss Bill on the TV, go to our Facebook page, Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder, and you can see some clips from the WGN TV Morning News.
Wendy and I are going to the stream, and you can too, or stick around and listen to Steve Bertrand. He's got the Wintrust Business Lunch coming up next. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.